Fellowship Plaza, Coruscant.
Located in the heart of the Senate District between the Jedi Temple and the Galactic Justice Center, Fellowship Plaza was usually abandoned after dark. But tonight, Alima was hardly alone. Jason and Ben stood just a few meters away, talking in the shadows beside a neatly trimmed row of blar trees. And she was not the only one eavesdropping on them. First, she had spotted Lumaya, standing in a tall privacy hedge on the opposite side of the walkway. So quiet and motionless, it was impossible to be certain she was still there. Then there was the dark blur that had come creeping through the fog after Ben arrived. It was about 20 meters away, crouching behind the hedge of Alima's side of the walkway, pointing what appeared to be a small parabolic dish through the blar trees toward where Ben and Jason stood talking. Whoever it was, the shadow had to be a Jedi, and a fairly adept one at that. Like Lumaya and Alima herself, he or she had drawn in on himself until he no longer seemed to have a Force presence at all. "How have the sparring sessions been going?" Jason asked. "Is he still trying to make you lose your temper?" Alima thought she saw Ben shaking his head. The two cousins were taking care to stand out of the light, and in such foggy conditions, even dark-sensitive Twi'lek eyes could see little more than silhouettes.
"No," Ben said. "I think he's really trying to teach me something."
"You couldn't ask for a better instructor," Jason said.
"But be careful.
Your father is just looking for an excuse to send you back to the academy." Ben remained silent for a moment, then asked,
"Is he going to find one?"
"That's up to you," Jason replied evenly. "Do you think the techniques I've been teaching you are dark?"
"It depends on how I use them,"
Ben replied.
"Exactly."
Jason's voice grew warm, and he clasped Ben's shoulder. "But the older your father grows, the more conservative he becomes. He's afraid he hasn't done a good job preparing the modern generation of Jedi, that they aren't strong enough to employ all aspects of the Force."
"What do you think?"
Ben asked.
"I think he's done a better job than he realizes. Many Jedi Knights aren't strong enough to use the whole Force, but some are."
Jason laid both hands on Ben's shoulders.
"You are."
Ben poured pride into the Force.
"You sure?"
"What do you think?" Jason demanded. "You're just asking because you want me to say it again."
"I guess so."
Ben's tone was chagrined.
"You wouldn't be teaching me to use my emotions if you didn't think I was strong enough."
Alima's heart swelled with an awe that was almost religious. Unless she misunderstood what she was hearing, and that did not seem possible, Luke Skywalker was losing his only son to the thing he feared most, the dark side. And his own nephew was going to be the instrument of that loss. Ben turned and started up the walkway, passing first Lumaya's hiding place, then Alima's. Once he was past, Alima turned her attention to the back side of the hedge and found the eavesdropper creeping toward her, still holding the parabolic antenna in one hand. As the shadow drew nearer, its silhouette sharpened into that of a Jedi in a standard hooded robe, then into the form of a tall woman with the pale face and heavy brow of a Shev. A couple of steps more, and Alima realized that this was not just any Jedi following Ben. It was Trissina Lobi, one of the masters who had served on Cal Omas' special counsel during the war with the Yuuzhan Vong. Alima dropped her hand to her lightsaber, at the same time willing Lobi not to make the mistake of letting that parabolic antenna swing past her hiding place. She needn't have worried. Lobi was still 2 meters away when Lumaya's sharp voice sounded from the other side of the hedge.
"Jason, I'm impressed."
Alima risked looking away from Lobi and saw Lumaya stepping onto the foggy walkway. Her long robes seemed to flow out of the hedges as though they were nothing but shadow.
"You have him very well under control."
"It's not a matter of control." There was just a hint of hostility in Jason's voice. "Ben is my cousin. I care about him very much." Lumaya studied Jason from behind her veil, then said,
"Caring is fine, as long as you don't let it stand in your way.
There's a difference between letting something stand in your way and destroying it needlessly, Jason countered. I'm beginning to think maybe I should send him back to his father. Lumaya's voice grew as alarmed as it did disapproving.
Why would you do a foolish thing like that?
To complete his training, Jason said. I'm having trouble finding the time to do it myself, and that leaves him vulnerable. You saw how he tried to manipulate me into feeding his ego.
I did. And that kind of weakness will make him a servant to his emotions,
Lumaya said.
It will also make him your servant, if you use it wisely.
That's not what I want for my cousin, Jason said, sounding slightly disgusted.
What you want doesn't matter,
Lumaya retorted.
What you need does, and you need an apprentice.
I need an assistant, Jason countered. And there are several Jedi Knights who would serve me better and require less time from me. Tahiri Vela, for example.
Tahiri is not a descendant of Anakin Skywalker,
Lumaya replied.
She does not have Ben's potential, and she will not serve you as well in the long run.
Jason remained silent for a long time, then finally asked, Don't you mean serve you?
It's the same thing,
Lumaya replied quickly.
We serve one cause, though I am having doubts about you, Jason. You seem more committed to your friends and family than you do to our mission.
If that means protecting them from needless harm, then yes, I am, Jason said. We're supposed to be doing this for the good of the galaxy, and the galaxy includes my friends and family.
Of course it does, Jason. I don't mean to imply that it doesn't.
Though Lumaya's words were conciliatory, her voice remained stern and demanding.
But the galaxy is bigger than your family. You must be willing to sacrifice what you care about to a greater purpose.
I've already proved that I'm willing to do that, Jason said coldly. I'm proving it every day.
Indeed you are.
Lumaya's voice softened, and she took Jason's elbow in her hand.
All I'm saying is that we need to keep Ben near. I don't know how yet, but I have a sense that he will prove the key to our success.
Jason considered this for a moment, then let out his breath and nodded. Okay, for now. But the minute I begin to suspect that you're only using him to get even with Uncle Luke...
You won't, because I'm not,
Lumaya said.
Everything I do to bring peace and justice to the galaxy.
Lumaya glanced up and down the walkway, no doubt reaching out in the Force to make certain no one had wandered into the area while they were talking, then asked,
Why did you want to see me here?
Because I didn't have time to go to your apartment, Jason said. Alima glanced back to the other side of the hedge. Lobi had dropped into a crouch and was running a feed line from the antenna to a recording rod on her belt. Now Alima began to feel less awestruck by the balance than betrayed by it. Since her failed attack on Jason, she had spent her time spying on him and Lumaya, and it had slowly dawned on her that just as Luke was losing Ben to what he feared most, Jason was becoming what Leia hated most, a Sith Lord. But if Lobi revealed that to Luke now, Jason's training would never be completed. Luke would hunt Lumaya down and kill her. Leia would redeem her son through her love, and the Solos would live happily ever after. And where was the balance in that? Jason recaptured Alima's attention with an angry rebuttal to something she had missed. I don't have time to be that careful tonight. Nyathol is about to give me my own Star Destroyer. His voice grew calmer, yet also more cold and demanding. I was supposed to meet her 5 minutes ago, but I need you to take care of something for me. Now.
What is it?
Lumaya asked.
And you might try asking in a civil manner.
Alima kept her gaze fixed on Lobi, who was continuing to record every word. After a moment, Jason spoke in a calmer tone. Sorry, I lost a friend today.
I see.
Lumaya's voice held just a hint of disapproval at Jason's sadness.
That must be why the Ferals are rioting.
Yes. The world brain died this afternoon. Jason's voice actually cracked. But the Ferals aren't exactly rioting. They just don't have any impulse control without the world brain to guide them.
And you want me to provide some?
No. Coruscant security can handle that, he said. I need you to finish that list I gave you.
The Bothans?
Lumaya asked.
Jason, you can't let your personal feelings...
I'm not, Jason interrupted. The Corellians finally figured out how GAG has been tracking them. They're planning to send their whole network after the world brain.
But not if they realize it's dead already,
Lumaya surmised. Right, Jason said. And I need them to attack. It will bring the terrorists out in the open.
And GAG will be waiting?
Lumaya asked. GAG will be watching, Jason corrected. Coruscant security will handle the actual ambush. Our agents will concentrate on the terrorists who escape. Some are bound to panic, and with any luck we'll be able to follow them back to their ringleaders.
So, many Bothans must die to bait your trap,
Lumaya said. No one would understand the necessity better than Bothans, Jason said. As Jason said this, Lobi was pulling her comlink from her utility belt. Alima watched with increasing despair as the Chev carefully set the parabolic antenna on the ground and donned her headset and throat mic. This could not be in the interests of the balance, not when Alima still owed Leia so much. After a moment's pause, Lumaya said,
You know that finishing this list will force Bothui to declare war. Their ambassador is on it.
Do him first, Jason said. Bothui is going to declare war anyway. Niathal says they're already outfitting 3 cruiser fleets for Corellian crews.
Fine,
Lumaya said.
The ambassador first, if you're sure.
Don't I sound sure? Jason snapped. A pair of military boots began to clack down the walkway as he departed. Just do it. I can't keep the Admiral waiting any longer. Dracaena Lobi reached for her throat mic and started to depress the send key in rhythmic sequence, using a click code to begin a silent broadcast to whoever was on the other end. Alima could see her finger movements just well enough to make out some of the message.
Skywalker, he was. Lumaya is following Ben.
That was as far as Lobi made it before Alima understood the reason the Force had brought the Chev so close to her hiding place.
Is more?
Alima jerked her lightsaber off her belt. She was a Jedi, and Jedi serve the balance.
Lumaya is...
Alima sprang from her hiding place, activating her blade as she flew through the air. Lobi was already rolling, her hand flying from her throat as she reached for her own weapon. Alima stretched her jump into a Force leap and brought her mangled half-foot down between Lobi's shoulder blades, then felt a crushing pain as the Chev continued to roll, smashing the back of an elbow into Alima's knee and knocking her legs out from beneath her. Alima landed flat atop a chrysanthus shrub, surprised and hurting. She whipped her lightsaber around to protect herself, half expecting to feel the death slash before it reached the middle guard. But the Chev had been disoriented by the unexpected assault and decided to buy some reaction time by leaping into a high Force flip. Alima arched her back and sprang up to her feet, then nearly fell when her aching knee buckled. Instead of leaping into another attack, she extended her hand and used the Force to pluck the headset off Lobi's head. The Chev landed an instant later, her eyes wide with rage and disbelief, but she wasted no time acknowledging Alima's identity. She merely ignited her own lightsaber and raced forward to attack. Alima barely had time to slash the headset apart before the Chev was on her, driving her back toward the hedge with a combination of high slashes and powerful front thrust kicks. The first kick that landed drove the air from Alima's lungs. The second doubled her over, making her an easy target, until she used the Force to accelerate herself off Lobi's foot and deep into the hedge where she had been hiding a moment earlier. As Alima crashed into the blar trees, she heard Lumaya on the other side, calling down the walkway to Jason.
Go on, I'll handle this.
The Sith scowled and ignited her own weapon. An exotic one that seemed equal parts whip and lightsaber, with long, flexible strands of metal and bright hissing energy.
Who are you?
Lumaya demanded.
Why are you... No time! Alima launched herself back through the Blar trees. If Lobi had not yet followed, that could only mean she was fleeing.
Come, before the Jedi spy escapes.
Alima emerged from the hedge to find Lobi 20 paces away and already fading into the night. Alima dropped her lightsaber and pointed in the Chev's direction, opening herself completely to the Force, using her anger and fear to draw it deep down inside. A moment later, its power began to burn, and she released it in a long, crackling bolt that caught her target square between the shoulder blades and drove her to the ground. Continuing to pour Force lightning into Lobi's prostrate form, Alima limped forward on her throbbing knee. Lobi suddenly stopped writhing and extended a hand toward a nearby patio. A decorative urn came flying out of the fog. Alima let the Force lightning sizzle out and tried to redirect the urn, but Lobi's Force grasp was too secure. The urn caught her full in her crippled shoulder and sent her flying. She landed in the chrysanthus shrub several meters away, her body throbbing with pain and her mind numb with shock. The hum and sizzle of clashing weapons slowly brought her back to her senses, and she sat up to find Trasina Lobi spinning and parrying, slowly forcing Lumaya back, probing and feinting, trying to work her way past the crackling strands of Lumaya's exotic light whip and into the striking range of a lightsaber. Alima summoned her own weapon back into her grasp, then stood and limped forward to help. Lobi sprang into a backflip and sailed over a crackling whip strike. Then, as she was still descending, she extended a hand in Alima's direction and used the Force to pull her into the path of the flashing strands. Lumaya barely managed to shut down the weapon before it struck, and even then the hot filaments cut through Alima's robe, burning a rainbow of hot welts into her thighs and ribs. Alima was still screaming when Lobi landed at Lumaya's side. The Chev brought her lightsaber down, and Lumaya's weapon arm, one of her many cybernetic parts, fell to the ground, trailing sparks and hydraulic fluid. Lobi reversed her blade instantly, angling for Lumaya's torso, but Alima was already leaping forward to catch the Chev's attack on her own lightsaber. Lobi whipped her lightsaber around low, aiming at Alima's knees and forcing her to leap back. Alima pointed at Lumaya's severed arm, then used the Force to send it spinning toward Lobi's head. The Chev woman ducked easily, but that gave Lumaya time to call her light whip into her remaining hand and strike again. Lobi pivoted away from the attack. Alima sprang at her from behind, striking for the Chev's thick neck, then cried out in surprise as a huge foot glanced off her ribs and still sent her staggering back. Lumaya seized the opportunity to launch a flurry of attacks, fanning the strands of her whip to make it more difficult to block, striking right and left to prevent the Chev from pivoting away again, slowly driving Lobi back toward Alima's droning lightsaber. Then, finally, Lobi faltered, gathering herself for a Force leap, but hesitating and retreating another step toward Alima instead. It was the moment Alima had been waiting for.
"You are good, Master Lobi, but not that good."
Alima spoke in a Force whisper, so soft that it was little more than a thought.
"Even you cannot defeat two of us."
Lobi's head snapped around, her eyes filled with confusion and doubt, and she spun into a whirling charge of crescent kicks and horizontal lightsaber strikes. Alima held her ground, ducking a lightsaber strike and letting a kick slip off her shoulder. Then, Force slammed the hilt of her lightsaber into the pit of the Chev's stomach and spoke again in her Force whisper.
"No good."
Amazingly, Lobi stumbled only one step back, but that step was one too far. Lumaya's light whip caught her across the back of the legs and severed them both at the knees. The Chev roared first in anger, then as she dropped onto the stumps and pitched forward onto her hands, in agony. It was a terrible sound to hear. Alima stepped forward and spoke once more in her Force whisper.
"There's no need to suffer."
She swept her blade across the back of the Chev's neck, and the head tumbled away.
"Your fight is done."
Tenelkar's palace, planet Hapes, deep inside the Hapes Consortium.
The Hall of Masters was as long and fancy as all the others down which the Solos had sneaked, with red cashmere carpeting and some of the finest artwork in the galaxy hanging on the walls. Between each masterpiece, an ornate trefoil arch led into another equally opulent corridor, while a white alabaster staircase at either end of the hallway ascended a vaulted turret into the highest reaches of Tenel Ka's immense palace.
"Oh boy," Han said. "Which way now?"
"Good question,"
Han frowned.
"Can't you just follow the force or something?"
"I could if I wanted Tenel Ka to feel me searching for her."
Han and Leia ascended side by side, passing portrait after portrait of Tenel Ka's royal ancestors. Their staircase was wide enough to accommodate a land speeder with room left for pedestrians, and it seemed to go up forever. After a good minute of climbing, a muffled murmur began to spill out of an unseen doorway onto a landing above. They continued to ascend, slowly and silently, when they had drawn to within a few meters of the landing. Han and Leia pressed their backs to the wall and crept up the last few steps in silence, then slipped into an extravagant waiting room filled with cologne-heavy Haepan males. Leia slipped her hand through Han's arm.
"They're probably suitors hoping to escort the Queen Mother to tonight's banquet," she whispered, leading him into the room. "Tenel Ka certainly likes to play games with her nobles."
"As long as they don't play games with us," Han answered.
As they moved deeper into the room, the young nobles turned to study them, sneering at Han's travel-worn flight jacket or frowning at Leia's Jedi robes. Han and Leia weaved through the crowd to a large, spitting rancor fountain that dominated the center of the room. Opposite them, a dozen royal guards blocked the mouth of a large ceremonial arch, beyond which lay a long white corridor. The hall was lined with displays of antiquated weapons and ancient blast armor, but its most spectacular feature was a glistening wind crystal chandelier, the size of an A-wing fighter.
"Guess we know where the royal residence is," Han muttered, looking away from the guards. "But to get past this bunch, it's gonna take pretty big..."
Leia's fingers bit into Han's arm.
"Han, she's here."
"Here?"
Han glanced casually around the room and saw nothing out of the ordinary. Just a couple of young nobles arguing over the stakes of a Dejeric game, and a middle-aged bachelor lecturing a pasty-skinned youth about the propriety of wearing a hat indoors.
"Who's here?"
"The assassin."
Leia's gaze went to the pasty-skinned youth and stayed there. With a slim, beardless face and a bald head crowned by a fashionable, if ridiculously tall, top hat, he had a dangerous yet feminine appearance. His eyes were dark and sunken, his nose as straight as a knife, his mouth a small, ruby-lipped gash. He was wearing a ruffled dress jacket that had to be six sizes too large for him, and he was careful to keep his hands balled inside the outer pockets, as though afraid of what they might do on their own.
"You mean him?" Han whispered in disbelief. "He's just a kid."
The kid's eyes slowly slid away from his lecturer and found Leia. When she did not look away, he gave her a short, almost imperceptible nod, then turned back to his conversation. Leia grabbed Han's arm.
"That's no kid."
She pulled him toward the guards waiting beneath the ceremonial arch.
"In fact, she's older than you are."
"She?"
"It's not important right now," Leia said. "She's not working alone. We need to warn Tenel Ka."
As they neared the arch, a rough-featured guard wearing the golden cuffhashes of a sergeant of the Royal Guard stepped out to meet them, blocking their way with a bulky Haepan power blaster.
"The Hall of the Wind Crystals is closed to visitors."
"Of course it is."
Leia lifted her hand in one of those little waves that Jedi use when they were making a force suggestion, then spoke so softly the sergeant had to lean down to hear her.
"But the Queen Mother is in danger. You need to seal the chamber."
The sergeant's eyes widened, and he repeated,
"The Queen Mother is in danger. Seal the
The command ended in a strangled gasp when something long and white hissed past Leia's head and planted itself in the side of the sergeant's neck. Han cried out and instinctively shielded Leia, throwing himself onto her and nearly losing an arm as her lightsaber blade snapped to life.
They had barely hit the floor when more of the strange projectiles hissed past overhead, coming from all corners of the chamber and filling the air with a sound like ripping cloth. An instant later, the rest of the guards dropped to the floor amid a cacophony of strangled outcries and clattering armor. Leia pressed her hand to Han's chest.
Han, you've got to stop doing that.
She rolled him off with surprising ease and came up kneeling, then plucked at her robe.
Jedi, remember?
Sorry, old habits.
Han rose to his knees. Half the suitors in the room, a couple of dozen, were charging across the chamber, leaping and dodging furniture, either holding a white throwing knife or drawing another from their sleeves. He spun around, reaching for the fallen sergeant's weapon, and found the entire complement of guards lying in the archway, most dead already, but a few writhing in pain, with a plastoid hilt protruding from their throats or faces. A cold knot formed in the pit of Han's stomach. The assassins were good, organized, and well-trained. He crawled forward and grabbed the sergeant's bulky power blaster and began to fumble with the unfamiliar hape in safety.
Blast! I don't care what you say. Next time I'm bringing...
Leia's lightsaber droned behind him. Then the smell of burned flesh filled the air and a body thudded to the floor. The rest of the attackers were already racing into the archway to either side of the Solos. Han turned to find Leia behind him, standing over a dead Hapen. Leia pulled Han to his feet, in the process turning him back toward the waiting chamber. A dozen young noblemen were standing over the middle-aged bachelor, who had been lecturing the pale-skinned kid about the hat. Another 15 suitors were watching in slack-jawed astonishment as the kid dived and rolled toward the same door through which the Solos had entered, dodging a constant stream of blaster fire from the guards posted there. Now that the assassin had discarded her oversized coat, revealing a skin-tight bodysuit and a utility belt lined with throwing knives, it was very clear Leia had been right about her being female. And she did have hair, at least a little of it. The top hat was also gone, revealing a bushy topknot that made her look wild, unpredictable, and very dangerous. Han started to shoulder the power blaster, but Leia put a hand on the barrel.
Not yet, she said. She's Force-sensitive.
Force-sensitive?
Han understood what Leia was saying. The woman would not be a quick kill, and they could not afford to get tied up here.
Will someone please tell me what the blazes is going on?
Maybe later.
Leia turned up the corridor after the assassins.
After I have time to figure it out myself.
Han grabbed a couple of spare power packs off the dead sergeant and raced after Leia. By the time he caught up to her, they were 24 meters down the white stone corridor and not gaining on their targets. Han stopped and knelt at the side of the corridor, taking cover behind the pedestal supporting a blue-sheened suit of early Durasteel blast armor.
We need to slow them down, he said.
Good idea, Leia continued running. Try not to hit me.
Hey,
Han called.
Not what I meant.
But Leia was well down the corridor, already passing beneath the great chandelier and picking up speed. Han cursed her foolhardiness, then took 3 deep breaths and shouldered the power blaster. Before he could open fire, the assassin suddenly stopped running and glanced uncertainly back toward Leia. Even without the Force, Han could sense their confusion. Either they had come to an unexpected dead end, or they had not seen her attack their fellows and could not understand why she was charging them. Maybe both.
What the blazes is going on?
Han asked again. He set his sights on the Hapen in front and blasted him between the shoulder blades, then swung the muzzle to the next man and fired again. That one bounced off a display pedestal, then staggered into the middle of the corridor and collapsed. The surviving assassins dived for cover, finally starting to return fire. Leia caught up to the rear of the group and launched herself into a whirling lightsaber attack, cloaking herself behind a basket of sapphire light and batting blaster bolts back toward their source. Han dropped another assassin, and she killed 3. Han blasted a man's leg and sent him somersaulting across the corridor. Leia used the Force to crush 2 more beneath a flying suit of heavy plexoid armor. Then the deafening bang of a concussion grenade echoed down the corridor. Han was momentarily blinded by a brilliant flash of yellow. Leia cried out in surprise, and the air resonated with the piercing shriek of blaster fire. Hapen voices began to scream and abruptly fall silent, and blaster bolts flew down the corridor so furiously it took a moment for Han to realize his vision had cleared. Leia was forced tumbling back toward him, somersaulting and twisting through the air, arcing from one side of the corridor to the other, batting blaster bolts aside and taking momentary shelter behind the display pedestals.
Behind her, the surviving assassins, if there were any, were nowhere to be seen. And a wall of royal guards was charging into the far end of the corridor, power blasters blazing. Han rose just high enough to show his shoulders and head above the pedestal he was using for cover.
"Knock it off, you rotters!" he yelled. "We're on..."
A volley of blaster bolts brought his protest to an end. Han looked back to the royal guards who had already advanced halfway down the corridor.
"Okay,"
he growled.
"I've had it with you guys shooting at my wife."
Han took aim at the guard's feet and began to bounce blaster bolts off the floor. An angry-browed man with the weathered face of a veteran pulled a concussion grenade off his equipment belt.
"No,"
Han cried, more to himself than anyone else.
"Don't!"
The guard thumbed the activation switch, and Han had no choice but to take aim at the man's chest. Before he opened fire, a string of bolts flew up the corridor from behind him, catching the guard full on and knocking him off his feet. The grenade tumbled from the Hapen's hand and rolled free. Han swung around in shock, or maybe it was fear, and had just enough time to glimpse the pale-skinned assassin standing in the archway, firing a cumbersome Hapen power blaster with each hand. Then the concussion grenade detonated behind him, filling the corridor with light and thunder and fire. The assassin barely blinked. She simply continued firing with one of her weapons and used the other to wave the solos toward her.
"Come on."
Her voice was high but cold.
"If you want to live."
Han glanced over at Leia. She nodded vigorously.
"Who doesn't?"
Leia rose and raced toward the archway, spinning and tumbling, batting the few blaster bolts that came her way back up the corridor. Han mirrored her progress, scrambling along sideways and laying suppression fire back toward the chandelier. He still had no idea what was happening here, but it was growing more and more apparent that nobody else did either. And when that happened, the only rule became survival by any means possible. As they passed through the archway, the pale woman pointed her chin toward the entrance by which they had arrived.
"Stairs.
Fine by me,"
Leia said, leading the way. They met no resistance as they had crossed the chamber, for the suitors who had not taken part in the attack were cowering behind furniture or cringing in corners, unwilling to risk their lives without weapons of their own. Han led the way down the stairs and into the corridor that led back toward the salon he and Leia had occupied earlier. The assassin called out behind him.
"Wait!"
Han stopped and glanced back to see her kneeling at the entrance to the turret. She was pointing both power blasters up the stairs, but looking toward Han and Leia.
"Where are you going?"
she demanded.
"Back to the hangar," Han answered. "We've got to get out of here."
"No."
The pale woman glanced back into the turret and began to fire up the stairs.
"We have a contract to finish."
"We?"
Leia asked.
"Maybe you're not getting paid, but you are part of this."
The knuckles on Leia's weapon hand went white, but luckily Han was the only one who saw.
"Look," Leia said, "I don't know..."
"You obviously know who we are," Han interrupted. "How about returning the favor?"
The assassin looked away from the stairs long enough to scowl at him.
"You don't know?"
"We haven't exactly been in the loop,"
Leia pointed out, picking up on Han's strategy.
"We just got in from Corellia."
A flurry of blaster bolts flashed into the corridor, nearly taking off the assassin's head. She merely rolled out the doorway and pressed her back against the wall, then glanced over at Leia's lightsaber.
"Why don't you call me Nashta?"
She almost seemed to smile.
"I'd like that."
"All right, Nashta," Han said. "In case you haven't noticed, someone set us up."
"Tenel Ka obviously knows about the assassination attempt,"
Leia added.
"And that means we have no chance of getting to her right now. All that can happen is we get trapped and killed."
"I don't think she knew we were involved until this started," Han said. "But that's changed. We've only got about 2 minutes to get back to the Falcon if we're lucky. After that, the hangar's going to be sealed up so tight, even a lightsaber won't be able to cut our way back inside."
Tenel Ka's palace, planet Hapes, deep inside the Hapes Consortium.
The consort's sitting room stank of smoke, scorched fabric, and seared flesh, and the floor was strewn with charred furniture and blaster-burned bodies. Emergency crews were evacuating the injured, while palace security agents holo-recorded the dead. On the far side of the chamber, a group of dazed-looking nobles was being sequestered by a detail of the Hapen Royal Guard. Jaina had begun to have a bad feeling about the CEC light transport that had jumped to hyperspace just as she and Zek entered the system. It had been accelerating away from Hapes at a rate few freighters could achieve. And the fact that there had been two squadrons of Hapen starfighters on the vessel's tail only tended to confirm that it had been the Millennium Falcon. Zek leaned close. Han and Leia Solo did not do this, he whispered. It's not their style.
I don't need you to tell me that. Don't you think I know my own parents?
Zek started across the room without another word. Jaina followed Zek toward the corner, where Prince Isolder was watching a female security officer interview a shaken-looking noble. As Jaina and Zek approached, two bodyguards stepped out to block their way. Isolder touched the arm of one.
No, Brack.
Though it had a few new and well-placed lines, Isolder's strong, featured Hapen face was as handsome as it had ever been.
They're fine.
Brack did not retreat.
They're Jedi, my lord, after what just happened.
Isolder clamped down on Brack's arm and physically pulled him back.
They're probably the reason my daughter survived what just happened.
He turned his attention to Jaina.
Unless I miss my guess, you were the source of the Queen Mother's recent uneasiness.
I did reach out to her, yes, Jaina said.
I thought as much.
Isolder opened his arms, inviting an embrace.
It's good to see you again, Jaina.
And you as well, Prince Isolder.
Jaina hugged him, then stood aside as he clasped arms with Zek.
I'm only sorry we couldn't arrive earlier.
Nonsense. We're thankful for your, warning. It prompted the Queen Mother to increase her guard.
And to seal the residence's inner blast doors,
Tenel Ka said, arriving behind Jaina and Zek.
You have nothing to be sorry for.
Jaina turned and saw Tenel Ka standing 2 meters away, surrounded by a small company of attendants and royal guards.
Your Majesty.
Jaina bowed, and Zek along with her.
Jaina, Zek, what an unexpected pleasure.
She motioned them upright, then glanced over her shoulder toward the great hall where most of the devastation had taken place.
I assume your visit has something to do with that.
Right. We came to warn you.
Jaina did not mention the Corellian assault fleet that Boatu suspected would soon be on its way to help with the coup. She would share that intelligence later, once they were alone.
We didn't think it would happen so soon.
I know you did everything in your power.
Tenel Ka's face grew troubled. She continued,
What I don't understand is why your parents were involved.
Jaina felt like she had been kicked in the stomach.
Involved? You're sure?
More than we'd like to be,
Isolder said. He sounded more disappointed than angry.
Your mother and Captain Solo arrived unannounced and asked for an audience with the Queen Mother. Before she could find time for them, they slipped out of the guest salon and disabled the entire palace security system.
We're still trying to learn how,
Tenel Ka said.
As close as we can estimate, they did it in less than 2 minutes, and they had to travel nearly half a kilometer through unfamiliar corridors.
Maybe you're having trouble because they didn't do it, Zek suggested.
Of course they did it!
The woman who said this was a stately-looking aide of perhaps 40 or 50. It was hard to tell given how hard Hapen's worked to stay young and attractive.
Such a feat is nothing for a...
Thank you, Lady Galney.
Tenel Ka silenced the woman with a polite flip of two fingers, then turned to Zek.
Do you have another theory?
Zek furrowed his brow, then said, Maybe they were here for the same reason we are, to warn you. The suggestion was greeted only by doubtful, in many cases scornful, Hapen expressions, and even Jaina had trouble seeing the basis for Zek's assertion. Finally, Tenel Ka asked,
Then why were they seen leaving with the leader of the assassination squad?
They were?
Jaina gasped.
I'm afraid so,
Tenel Ka said.
A pale woman with a shaved head and a topknot. When my guard managed to pin your parents down, she even risked her own life to rescue them.
Jaina's heart sank. It certainly sounded like her parents were working with the assassins. There must be an explanation. Zek gave her arm a reassuring squeeze. Jaina, you need to trust your feelings. Jaina pulled away, irritated and confused, and shaken.
I don't know what my feelings are,
Jaina said. She turned to Tenel Ka.
Tenel, Queen Mother, I don't know what to say.
I'm having a hard time believing it myself,
Tenelkar replied.
First appearances are against them, but the investigation is far from complete, and there is some conflicting evidence.
Such as? Zek demanded.
Some eyewitness accounts suggest the Solos may have attacked a few assassins when the fighting began.
Tenelkar turned and extended her arm toward the great hall where most of the fighting had taken place.
We can go have a look if you'd like.
I'd like.
Zek's voice was hardly hostile, but it did not take a Jedi to sense that he was angry.
Why are you ignoring these accounts?
We're not ignoring them,
Isolder said.
He stepped to Zek's side and they all started toward the ruined hall.
But eyewitness accounts are notoriously unreliable, as I'm sure you were taught in your investigation courses at the Jedi Academy.
And some eyewitnesses claim the men the Solos attacked were actually trying to defend the Queen Mother,
Lady Galney said.
Some very credible witnesses.
I'll judge that for myself, Zek said. He turned to Isolder. When can I speak to these witnesses?
Isolder stopped and turned to Zek.
You want to interrogate Hapen nobles?
That's right, Zek said. There's something wrong here, and I...
That's enough.
Jaina grabbed the back of Zek's arm and squeezed.
I'm sure the Queen Mother and her staff will discover the truth.
Fact,
Tenelkar said.
The investigation will give the Solos every benefit of the doubt, and I do intend to interview every eyewitness personally.
Thanks, Your Majesty,
Jaina said.
I appreciate it. If there's anything we can do to help...
There is,
Isolder said instantly.
We know the Falcon often travels under false transponder codes. A list would prove very helpful.
Jaina's mouth grew dry. When Jaina was slow to answer, Lady Galney reminded her.
The Hapes Consortium is an important part of the Galactic Alliance. A very important part. And your parents are terrorists.
Alleged terrorists,
Tenelkar corrected. She fixed her gray eyes on Jaina, then said,
It would be better for everybody. My commanders will be more careful if they know when they're actually dealing with the Falcon.
And the information will be useful only as long as they remain inside the consortium,
Isolder pointed out.
If they aren't a danger to the Queen Mother, I'm sure they'll be departing Hapen space as soon as possible.
In which case, we won't pursue them beyond our boundaries,
Tenelkar added.
We'll leave them to the Alliance authorities, whom I'm sure already have the false codes.
I'm not sure I know all the false codes, Jaina said, forcing herself to answer.
Tenelkar's deal was more than fair.
But I'll give you the ones I do. Thank you,
Tenelkar said.
I know how hard this must be for you.
Just tell your commanders to be patient,
Jaina said. She glanced in Galney's direction and was a little sickened by the smug satisfaction she sensed in the woman. But that changed none of the basic facts of the situation.
Mom and Dad won't give up easily, but they're not going to kill anyone they don't have to, either.
I've already instructed my commanders that we need your parents alive,
Tenelkar said.
Good,
Jaina said.
We could help by identifying that assassin and trying to trace her.
Actually,
Tenelkar interrupted,
I've already asked your brother to help us with that investigation.
Jaina's jaw dropped.
Jason?
I know you've had your differences of late, but this is what Jason does now.
Tenelkar's voice was apologetic but firm.
Can you honestly say you would do better?
That depends on what you mean by better, Jaina retorted.
Do you have any idea what he's been doing on Coruscant?
Protecting the populace from Corellian terrorists, by all accounts I've seen.
Tenelkar's tone was defensive and stubborn.
Maybe we should just finish the briefing and be on our way, but we really need to do this in private.
Of course,
Tenelkar said.
Come with me.
The Queen Mother motioned the two Jedi to her side. When they had obeyed, she drew gasps from the Galney and several other noble ladies by slipping her arm through Jaina's, then leaning close.
And you are wanted, my friend.
Tenelkar's whisper was so soft that Jaina heard it inside her head more than in her ears.
There is something else I must ask you to do for me. Something I can trust only to my oldest friends. I need you to go to Terraform.
Of course,
Jaina replied. Her heart had sunk clear to her knees. Whether or not her parents had been part of the attempt on Tenelkar's life, the fact remained that Jaina had to consider the possibility.
And that struck her as a sadness nearly as great as her brother Anakin's death.
The Jedi are always at your disposal.
Fellowship Plaza, Coruscant.
Though dawn had come bright and golden several minutes earlier, a sense of darkness and danger still hung over Fellowship Plaza. And the closer Luke and Mara drew to the crime scene, the heavier and more sinister that sense became. A squad of dark-visored police bots blocked access to the walkway at both ends, while a team of spider-like forensics droids swarmed over the tall privacy hedges to either side. Two detectives, the first a huge-headed Bith in a rumpled tabard, the other a green-scaled Rodian in a sharply creased Zing suit, stood inside the security corridor comparing notes.
"This doesn't look good," Mara said. "I'm afraid we're about to find out why we can't find Trasina in the Force."
"Me too," Luke answered.
They reached the security cordon and were stopped by a police bot, who did a quick retinal scan on Luke and stepped aside.
"Detectives Ratu and Tizer are expecting you."
The police bot pointed first at the Rodian, then the Bith. As the Skywalkers drew near, the two detectives stopped talking. The Bith extended a delicate-fingered hand in greeting to Luke, then to Mara.
"Master Skywalker and Master Skywalker, thanks for coming. I'm Chal Tajer."
He waved at his green-scaled companion.
"This is my partner, Quad Ratu."
Instead of offering a hand, Ratu twitched his scaly snout in suspicion.
"Do you know a Trasini Lobi?"
"Of course they know her," Tajer said. "She's a Jedi Master."
"That's correct," Luke said. He could sense Ratu's excitement through the Force. The Rodian's hunting instinct had been triggered, and he was eager to find his prey. "She sits on the Jedi Council, as a matter of fact."
"Not anymore."
Continuing to study their faces rather obviously, Ratu waved a hand toward the hedge of the near side of the walkway.
"A gardener droid found her."
"God, show some respect."
The edges of Tajer's cheekfolds turned blue with embarrassment.
"Sorry about that. My partner thinks everyone is a suspect."
"Everyone is a suspect."
Ratu's dark eyes remained fixed on Luke and Mara.
"Where were you early last night?"
Tajer let out his breath and whistled exasperation.
"God!"
He turned his huge head toward the Skywalkers.
"You don't have to answer."
"No, it's fine."
A knot of anger was forming in Luke's stomach.
"I had an important meeting with Chief Omis that lasted until after midnight. Mara was with me." "If you'd like to confirm that, you can calm his office."
Mara's voice was particularly sharp and sarcastic, a sign of the sorrow and anger that Luke could feel in her through the Force.
"As for Chief of State..."
Ratu rotated his dish-shaped sensory antenna toward her.
"Would I be able to speak with the Chief Omis personally?"
"No,"
Tajer said. He turned to Luke.
"Look, someone assassinated the Bothan ambassador last night, and the Chief of Detectives wants as many of us on it as he can get. So if you want to handle this matter yourself, just say..."
"We're the law on Coruscant,"
Ratu objected.
"Not the Jedi."
The Bith whirled on his partner.
"Someone killed a Jedi Master, you laser brain!"
He was so irritated that his voice warbled.
"Even if we solve the case, are we going to make the arrest?"
Ratu's snout widened in excitement.
"You afraid of a challenge?"
"Maybe we should all work together for now," Luke suggested.
He waved at the forensics droid swarming over the near hedge.
"You've already started collecting evidence, and the Jedi can bring some unique resources to bear."
Ratu cast a resentful glance in Tajer's direction, then let out a disgusted snort.
"We call the shots," he said. "Technically, you're just observers."
"I guess that's better than suspects," Mara retorted.
She turned to Tajer.
"Why don't you show us the scene?"
"You're standing on it."
Tajer nodded at the walkway, then waved at the blartree hedges lining either side.
"It looks like they were waiting in ambush."
"They?"
Luke asked.
"You think that's wrong, Skywalker?"
Ratu kept his bulging eyes fixed on Luke.
"Something maybe you need to share?"
"No, go on," Luke said. "I was leaping to conclusions. No one has anything to gain by that."
"Right,"
Tajer said. He pointed down the walkway to a blartree on the far side, where a forensics droid appeared to be making resin casts of a set of footprints.
"One ambusher was waiting there, and another over here."
He pointed to a bush on their side of the walkway, a little closer where another droid was casting footprints.
"What species?"
Mara asked.
human, or near human, Ratu answered. The shoes made it hard to tell. But both ambushers were probably female and fairly light. The prints were small and shallow.
And one had a deformed foot. She didn't put any weight on the front part of her shoe,
Tajer added. Motioning the Skywalkers to follow, he stepped through the hedge.
We think your Jedi realized something was wrong and tried to come up on them from behind.
Too bad they saw her coming, Ratu said from the back of the group. But it doesn't look like she suffered long.
They emerged from the hedge into a bed of knee-high chrysanthus shrubs. In the center of the bed, still dressed in Jedi robes, lay the torso of a large Chev woman. Both lower legs and her head lay a couple of meters away. The lifeless eyes in the head were still open wide in surprise. There was no sign of her lightsaber or other equipment. Luke's stomach grew hollow. This is a message. She's toying with me.
Toying with you? Ratu repeated. Who would that be?
In a minute. Mara touched Luke through the Force, making sure that he felt her suspicion and growing irritation.
How is this a message, Luke? From Lumaya?
I'm afraid so, Luke said. I think she's telling us she can take Ben anytime she wants.
What does this have to do with Ben?
Mara demanded.
You'd better not be telling me you're using our son as bait.
Not bait, exactly, Luke said. But I did ask Trissina to keep an eye on him, because I thought Lumaya might try to use him against me. It looks like I was right.
And that's why you told me to bring my Shoto?
Mara asked, referring to the half-length lightsaber she had built as a defense against Lumaya's light whip.
Because you knew Lumaya had something to do with Trissina's death?
Luke shrugged. It looks like I was right.
I take it this Lumaya is our prime suspect?
Tajer asked.
Who is she?
One of Luke's old girlfriends,
Mara said sharply. Ratu's antenna snapped upright.
That explains it.
He lifted his hand and dictated a note into the data mic clipped to his cuff, then gestured at Lobi's body.
And Master Lobi is the new girlfriend.
Instead of answering, Mara merely lifted her brow and looked to Luke. Not at all, Luke answered. Mara is my wife. I don't have a girlfriend. Ratu shrugged.
What do I know about you, Jedi?
He asked.
With most humans, it's usually sex or love.
Tajer nodded sagely.
87% of the time, spice is a distant second.
Not this time, Luke insisted. This time, it's revenge.
Revenge for what?
Tajer asked.
And how is your son involved?
Lumaya was a Sith apprentice, Luke explained. She wants revenge because I shot her down and helped overthrow the Emperor. Ben is just a means to an end.
Sure, Master Skywalker, Ratu said. Whatever you say. But for now, we'll keep all motives on the table.
Do you think you can identify your old girlfriend?
Tajer produced a large datapad from a pocket of his wrinkled tabard and began to enter codes.
There was a lot of fog last night, but the security cams have pretty good imaging filters. We're in a blind spot here, but we might be able to catch her on the way in.
I'd recognize her if I saw her. Luke went to the Bith's side and saw that he was calling up last night's video feed from the anti-terrorist cams that had been installed to protect Fellowship Plaza. But she won't be visible.
She won't?
No. She's too skilled for that. Mara joined them and held her hand out for the datapad.
May I?
Tajer ruffled his cheek flaps, then reluctantly passed over the datapad. Mara began to punch keys, bringing up the feed from the entrance closest to the Jedi Temple. It didn't take long to spot Ben entering the park and Master Lobi trailing him, following a discreet distance behind and taking care to remain in the shadows. But they spotted no hint of Lumaya, or of the second killer, even when Mara brought up the feeds from the next two cams. Luke checked the timestamp at the bottom of the screen, then said, "It's too early. Trissina's message didn't come until 1922.
"What message?" Ratu asked.
"She clicked in with a partial message, saying she had spotted Lumaya," Luke replied.
"What else?"
Ratu demanded.
"That's it," Luke said.
"Just that I was right. Lumaya was watching Ben." Then she cut it short.
But it doesn't look like this Lumaya was following your son when he left the temple,
Tasher said. He reached over to tap the screen of the datapad.
So she was waiting for him inside the plaza.
It would seem so.
The edge in Mara's voice was as cold as the knot in Luke's stomach.
I don't like it. She knew where he was going to be.
We said this was an ambush,
Ratu reminded them.
Both killers were waiting for Master Lobi in the hedges.
That's the way it looks, all right,
Luke said. He turned back to Mara.
Lumaya had to enter the plaza somewhere.
Mara began to bring up feeds from the other entrances and run through them at high speed. Finally, a line of static flashed across the screen, and she froze the picture and checked the time code.
1914,
she reported. 8 minutes before Trissina's message, Luke said. That fits.
But that's just a power glitch,
Tasher said, still looking at the datapad. It's a force flash, Luke corrected, and it can be used to prevent a security cam from recording your image as you pass through its field of view. Mara checked the cam code at the bottom of the screen, then asked Tasher,
is that the Galactic City entrance?
Tasher nodded.
That's right.
Then we're in luck,
Ratu said.
Galactic City is a dignitary central. There are security cams all over.
Zorp House, apartment tower, Coruscant.
Within a few hours of discovering Lumaya's trail in Fellowship Plaza, Luke, Mara, and their two detective companions were following a Nymoidian building manager down a Larmel stone hall on the 300th floor of the opulent Zorp House apartment tower. The building manager stopped next to an expensive homogeny side table, then pointed down the hall to a double sliding door of polished brass.
That's a 30712,
he whispered.
You're sure it's theirs?
Tasher asked. Like Ratu, the Bith was convinced that Lumaya had an accomplice. Luke and Mara were not arguing the point, especially since there had been two sets of footprints in the hedges. The Neomoidian spread his leathery hands.
There are 25,000 apartments in Zorp House,
he said.
I can't know who lives in them all.
But this is where the security cam keeps malfunctioning, Luke asked. The Nymoidian nodded his flat-faced head.
And that is the only apartment whose door never opens when the cam is working.
Ratu drew his blaster and started down the hall, pulling the Nymoidian along beside him.
Buzz them,
Ratu ordered.
Say you've been getting a smoke alert from their apartment, and you want to be sure they're okay.
Me?
The Nymoidian glanced warily at Ratu's blaster, then at Luke and Mara.
Isn't the tenant dangerous?
Are you refusing to cooperate with a criminal investigation?
Ratu demanded.
You won't have to go inside,
Tasher said, speaking to the manager over his partner's shoulder.
We're just trying to find out if they're home.
The Nymoidian's pace remained unenthusiastic, but he did go to the door and do as he was asked. When no answer came from the second buzz, the Nymoidian said,
It seems they are not home.
He turned to leave.
If you need me, I'll be down in my...
Not yet.
Ratu caught his arm and pointed at the security panel.
The universal code.
Of course. Red 7, blue 12, green 00.
Luke entered the code, and the door slid open. Without waiting to be dismissed, the Nymoidian spun around and tried to leave again. Luke caught his arm.
Wait here. You'll be safe in the hall, and I'll know if you try to leave.
The Nymoidian's face paled to ivory.
Of course, I am happy to assist the Alliance in any way I can.
Luke led the way into the apartment. It was smaller than he had expected, and surprisingly cozy, with a sunken seating area in front of the entertainment wall. Luke and Mara went into the bedroom and checked the closet and refresher to make certain Lumaya was not hiding anywhere. By the time they returned to the main room, the two detectives were already emerging from the kitchen area.
She's not in the kitchen,
Ratu said.
Not in there either,
Mara said, hooking a thumb toward the bedroom.
Looks like we missed her.
Luke went into the kitchen and began to look through processing units and storage containers. He quickly learned that Lumaya lived almost entirely on juice and protein drinks. Not too surprising, given the challenges of maintaining a body that was as much cybernetic as flesh. Luke turned back toward the living room and saw Mara's reflection staring at him out of a mirror. She seemed more beautiful than ever, her hair a deeper red, her face a little fuller and less lined.
Notice anything? She was speaking from the bedroom, but thanks to the reflection, Luke felt as though he were looking directly into her eyes. About the mirrors, I mean. Of course, Luke said. They're everywhere, and you can see the entire apartment from anywhere. Mara appeared disappointed.
Not that, she said. They distort your image, make you appear more attractive from every angle.
Okay, now I see it, Luke said.
Like you said, Sith are all about illusions and deception, Mara said, even when they're alone. Know what else I found?
Her datapad? Luke asked hopefully.
Sorry.
Mara emerged from the bedroom empty-handed, and he turned to face her, the real her, which he thought was even more beautiful than the enhanced reflections.
Nothing. No luggage, no power cells, no toolkits.
Luke frowned.
No replacement parts?
Mara shook her head.
Not a one.
Replacement parts?
Ratu asked from the door.
Cybernetic replacement parts, Luke answered.
Lumaya is as much machine as human, and that means she needs to maintain herself.
Exactly, Mara said. All Luke has is one mechanical hand, and he has to keep half a kilo of parts handy or risk not being able to cut his own nerve steak. Lumaya must carry a small workshop around.
Taja raised his brow.
So if her tools aren't here...
Then neither is Lumaya.
Ratu let out a vile Rodian curse.
Someone warned her we were coming.
No. Mara went into the bedroom, then returned with an elegant taffeta skirt and tunic set. She intends to come back sometime. No woman would take her luggage and leave this behind. At least not one who has so many of these mirrors.
So she's taking a trip somewhere, Ratu said. That means she had to arrange transport.
He entered the room, took the datapad from Luke, and went over to the entertainment wall.
The law enforcement tools provision,
Ratu explained.
I can recall all data access from this origination point any time in the last month.
He jacked in, then began to punch the keypad furiously. A moment later, a section of the entertainment wall activated, displaying a record of data accesses from that location. He selected travel, and a map showing the location of the Bothan embassy appeared.
What the blazes?
Tajer cried.
That doesn't make any sense.
It does if Lumaya killed the ambassador, Mara said. See what other locations she's looked up.
Ratu typed a few more commands, then a message came up asking for a password. He tapped the key some more, and another message appeared. GAG access only. Ratu disconnected his datapad so fast that its speaker popped, and Tajer let his chin fall to his chest.
How did Lumaya slice into GAG files?
Mara asked. Luke didn't bother guessing. He was beginning to fear the answer was a lot less complicated than they realized, and the thought was causing an icy lump to gather in his belly.
Aboard the Anakin Solo, stationed in geosynchronous orbit above planet Hapes,
Jason stood at the viewport of the Anakin Solo's command salon, staring out at the cloud-mottled face of the planet Hapes. It was a world of splendor and abundance, covered in sparkling oceans and verdant islands. But Jason was too troubled to enjoy looking at it. Someone had tried to kill Tenel Ka and his daughter, Alana. Jason took 3 deep breaths, exhaling slowly after each and consciously stilling his mind. On the planet below, the island rainforest darkened to a deep, night-colored purple. Lumaya was sitting across the spacious cabin at Jason's equipment-packed intelligence station, poring over the latest data on Tenel Ka's unpredictable nobles.
We have an opportunity to position you as the savior of the Galactic Alliance, but only if we move fast.
Positioning me isn't what matters here, Jason said. Catching the terrorists who attacked the Queen Mother, that's important. Making certain it doesn't happen again, that matters. Have you found out who's behind the attack on the Queen Mother? A soft chime sounded from a small screen in the corner of the ceiling. Then Ben's voice came out of the intercom speaker.
Special Agent Skywalker, sir. The packages have arrived.
They're not packages, Ben, Jason said. They're our guests. Show them to their cabins and...
We would prefer to join you now.
Tenel Ka's voice was less distinct than Ben's, but still very recognizable.
We'll freshen up later.
That would be fine, Your Majesty. Will Ben be a satisfactory escort?
Quite,
Tenelkar replied.
We will see you directly.
The intercom crackled off, and a knowing twinkle came to Lumaya's eyes.
No need to worry, Jason. I know when my presence would be a problem.
She went to the corner of the salon and touched her palm to a hidden pressure sensor. A meter-wide panel of wall popped forward and slid aside. She stepped through the opening into a narrow white corridor, then looked back over her shoulder.
When you need me, I'll be in my cabin.
Good. Jason went to the intelligence station and began to study the data Lumaya had gathered on Tenelka's nobles. I'll let you know what else the Queen Mother can tell us about these suspects.
I'm sure that will be very useful, Lumaya said.
As soon as the wall panel closed, Jason summoned his Tendrondo armed security droid, SDXX, and asked him to do a security sweep of the entire cabin. He did not really suspect Lumaya of planting an eavesdropping device, but he was not going to take any chances. Lumaya clearly knew too much about his relationship with Tenelka already, and he was determined to keep her from learning any more. By the time Jason finished reviewing the files Lumaya had pulled, SDXX had completed his sweep and was standing next to the intelligence station. Jason looked away from his display and nodded. Report.
No eavesdropping devices detected by preliminary and standard sweeps.
The droid's voice was thin, raspy, and just a bit menacing. Go, Jason said.
Acknowledged.
The droid pivoted and stalked to the corner in utter silence, then touched the pressure sensor and vanished down the corridor. A moment later, the feminine voice of Jason's reception droid sounded over the intercom speaker.
Special Agent Skywalker is here with your guest, Colonel Solo.
Send them in. Jason rose and stepped out from behind his intelligence station. The door hissed, and Tenelka strode into the command salon with Alana at her side. Mother and daughter alike were dressed in tailored flight suits of gray Elytrotex, a nanoweave material better known for its opalescent luster and outrageous cost than its effectiveness as an all-purpose armor. Behind them followed Ben in his black GAG utilities, and an older woman with a long aquiline nose whom Jason recognized as Tenelka's personal aide, Lady Galney. Bringing up the rear was DD-11A, a large defender droid with a cherubic face, synth-skinned torso, and weapons-packed arms. The droid served Alana as both bodyguard and nanny. Jason started to bow to Tenelka, but as soon as Alana saw him, she pulled her hand free of Tenelka's grasp and raced across the deck with her arms thrown wide.
Jedi Jason!
Jason laughed and leaned down to scoop her into his arms, and all trouble left his thoughts. She was a beautiful little girl, with her mother's red hair and a button nose, and suddenly he knew that his long struggle was worthwhile, that he could never stop trying to bring peace and order to the galaxy, that Alana and all the children like her deserved to grow up on worlds untroubled by war and injustice. Alana leaned back, studying Jason with a pair of big gray eyes.
Jason, some bad men tried to kill us, but Mama's guards chased them off, so now we can't have no more parties.
Any more parties?
Tenelka corrected.
Let Colonel Solo put you down. You're such a big girl now that you've grown too heavy to hold for long.
The Queen Mother is right, Jason said, holding Alana out where he could look at her. Though he usually managed to sneak a visit 3 or 4 times a year, this was the first time he had noticed the same fiery sparkle in Alana's eyes that he had so often seen in his own mother's when he was growing up. May I return you to the deck now? Alana frowned.
Jedi is supposed to be strong.
I am strong, Jason laughed. But I need to save my strength for when I find the bad men. Alana's eyes grew wide.
You're going to fight the bad men?
Of course, Jason said. Hunting bad men is my job. Alana considered this a moment, then said,
Very well, Jason. You can put me down. For now.
Thank you. Jason lowered Alana to the deck and watched her return to Tenelka's side. Then he turned to Ben, who was still studying him carefully, and said, I'd like you to escort Lady Galney to the guest suite. Stand by during her inspection.
Okay. Ben's voice betrayed his disappointment. I mean, as you like, Colonel.
Jason would have preferred to let Ben stay for Tenel Ka's briefing, but Ben had been present when Jason learned that he was Alana's father, and Jason worried that seeing them together would overcome the memory rub he had used to alter Ben's recollection of the incident. Next, Jason turned to Lady Galny. Ben will see to anything you require to ensure the Queen Mother's comfort.
Actually, I'm staying.
Galny flashed him a cold smile.
As I'm sure you can appreciate, times have been rather trying for the Queen Mother.
I'll be fine, Lady Galny.
Tenel Ka kept her gaze fixed on Jason as she spoke.
Colonel Solo's suggestion is an excellent one, and I'd like you to take Dee Dee and Alana along. Ben, I mean Special Agent Skywalker, can watch the Chumda while Dee Dee does a security sweep.
Galny's green eyes flashed anger in Jason's direction, but she inclined her head to Tenel Ka.
As you wish.
She held her hand out to Alana.
Come along, Chumda.
Alana stepped past the offered hand to Ben, then took his hand and pulled him toward the exit.
Are you a Jedi too, Ben?
Yes.
Ben cast a guilty glance over his shoulder, then amended.
Sort of. I'm in training.
Mama was a Jedi once,
Alana said.
She still has her lightsaber and practices with a Wiimote.
Alana's narrative grew inaudible as she led her small entourage deeper into the anteroom. Once the door had slid shut behind Dee Dee and Galny, Jason and Tenel Ka stood facing each other in an uncertain silence, their eyes meeting, but their bodies still three paces apart. Finally, Jason felt sure no one would be returning unexpectedly. It's okay, he said. I just had a security sweep. Tenel Ka did not smile, but a look of relief flashed across her face. She was in Jason's arms almost before he could open them.
It's good to have you here, Jason. Thank you for coming.
I'm glad you asked me. Jason held her to his chest, then said, You didn't need to come up here, though. I would have been happy to come to the palace.
No, this is better.
Tenel Ka pulled back far enough to look up into his eyes.
I needed to bring Alana someplace safe.
Jason cocked a brow. And your palace isn't?
Not at the moment.
Tenel Ka took his hand and led him over to the viewport, where the shadowy crescent of the planet's nightside was just rotating into view.
Someone poisoned the witnesses.
Witnesses? Jason asked.
To the coup attempt,
Tenel Ka explained.
I had everyone who saw the attack isolated in the well.
The well is your detention center? Jason asked. Tenel Ka nodded.
My secret detention center, she explained. Comfortable, hidden and very secure. My ancestors have used it for more than 20 centuries to detain troublesome nobles, and no one has ever escaped from it.
They still haven't, if I understand what you said correctly. Jason flashed a lopsided Solo grin. Unless the Hapen definition of escape is broader than it is in most parts of the galaxy. Tenel Ka frowned at him.
Your joke is not funny, Jason. Most of the men who died were innocent bystanders. I was only holding them until I could determine who was and was not involved in the attack.
Bystanders? Why would anyone poison... Jason let the question trail off, then said, Tenel Ka, whoever killed the prisoners is trying to do more than silence co-conspirators. Tenel Ka nodded.
If all they wished was to protect their own identity, they wouldn't have poisoned all the prisoners.
She turned and stared out at the darkening planet below.
The usurpers wanted to appear that I am killing the innocent as well as the guilty. They're trying to turn my nobles against me.
We won't let that happen. We'll find out who these usurpers are and stop them. Jason placed his hands on her shoulders. You said the well is secret. Who knows about it?
Only one company of my personal guard and a few members of my inner circle.
It could be someone in the guard, Jason said. But chances are...
Yes, it always seems to be the ones closest to you.
Jason looked toward the salon exit. Lady Galny?
That's not what I meant.
Tenel Ka said.
Lady Galny's family members are amongst my strongest supporters. Her sister will rally to my cause the moment Jaina delivers my summons.
Jason frowned. Jaina was here?
Yes.
Tenel Ka took Jason's hand
and led him toward the salon's conversation area.
Your sister arrived shortly after your parents.
My parents? Jason was growing more perplexed every moment. What are they doing here?
Nothing any longer. They've fled.
Tenel Ka sat on the couch and pulled Jason down beside her.
I'm afraid they may have been involved in the assassination attempt.
Involved?
Participated,
Tenel Ka clarified. For a time, Jason was too stunned to reply. Finally, Jason turned to Tenel Ka. You're sure?
I'm sure they were here,
Tenel Ka explained.
They arrived on the day of the Queen's pageant and insisted that they had an appointment to see me. At first I thought there'd been a miscommunication, but my security staff is now convinced that their assignment was to cause a break in my security routine.
Your security staff is convinced? Jason stood and looked into the corner, trying to make sense of what he was hearing. What do you think?
Jason, I don't know what to think. Some preliminary reports suggest that they may have been trying to warn me about the assassins, but...
Jason continued to face the corner.
But what?
He asked, not looking away from the corner. Go on.
But they were seen leaving with the leader of the assassins.
Tenel Ka finished.
She even went to their aid when my guards pinned them down.
I see. A terrible sense of sadness came over Jason, and a sense of inevitability. Had his parents really drifted across the thin line that separated heroes from murderers? Had they really slipped into the murky realm of terrorism? He turned to face Tenel Ka. Is there any reason to think we should place our faith in the reports suggesting they were trying to warn you? Tenel Ka lowered her eyes.
Not really.
I didn't think so. Jason crossed the cabin to the comm station. It appears my parents have become a part of the problem in this war.
Jason, what are you doing?
Tenel Ka asked, following.
Please, remember that as bad as it looks, we don't know the whole story yet.
But we need to. Jason slipped into the chair and activated the data display, then began to scroll through a long list of electronic forms. That's why we need to find them. Jason found the form he was looking for. A GAG search and detain warrant, and began to enter the names of his parents.